You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Good morning, good afternoon, actually it's about noon time in Australia, and that's where we're going to go, so I'm just going to add my guest tonight, we will connect. So, indeed, it's noon time in Australia, it's 1 a.m. in UK, it's sometime in the late afternoon in the States, and my guest tonight is, with his guest parakeet, Dr. Tony Minervino. Hello, Tony. How are you, my friend?
I'm great, JP. How are you?
I'm right. I'm very good. Who's your friend?
I've got a couple of friends here. Several friends here. I've got a parrot named, it's actually a galah, an Australian parrot. Named George, and he's having a snooze. And what you hear in the background is two lorikeets, Gaia and Maya. And they can make a lot of noise when they want to.
Well, they're obviously joining in the conversation. Yes, hello, Gaia and Maya. Excellent. I was sitting in my garden today, and I noticed today how many birds live in my garden. I've got like five chickens, and it's all these little ones and blue tits and things. And it's a really delightful little piece of heaven in my ramshackle cottage that I live in. So it's lovely to do that. So you're on the other side of the planet. What's it like? What's the day like? It's probably very nice.
I'm in the far north of New Zealand in a small town called Kaitaia. It's a town of 5,000. And, it's basically an agricultural area. This is where a lot of food is grown. And, we get to go to a Saturday morning market and get all fresh organic vegetables and fruits, which is really great. We're just going into fall. Today's a beautiful day. The temperature is probably about 22 degrees and it's sunny. But as we go into fall and winter, it's going to be, rainy. All right. But in New Zealand, you very rarely have a whole day of overcast. Usually it just downpours and then the sun comes out and you see these gorgeous rainbows and big white clouds along the horizon. Just a second, I'll cancel that. Okay. Yeah, so it's pretty nice. The skies are blue, the clouds are white and fluffy, no sign of chemtrails. I've only seen chemtrails here once, and that's coming across on the ferry from the South Island to the North Island, and the sky was actually checkerboarded. But other than that, I've seen no chemtrail activity, and I don't feel like the radiation is off the charts, so I feel quite safe and comfortable here.
Well, that's lovely. And so from this this place, I mean, you're talking of the land of the Lord of the Rings. I mean, if anybody wants to imagine the countryside, that's about it, isn't it? It's like that's New Zealand.
All the pastoral scenes in the Lord of the Rings were done in the North Island, down in Matakana. That's where they built the Hobbit town. And then all the mountain scenes are in the South Island in the Remarkables. I think it's the Remarkables, or the Southern Alps, or the combination of the two. Yeah, and they are remarkable. I remember when I flew into Queenstown, I was part of the cast of a movie that was shot for TV in the States by NBC. It was Hercules. And we were flying down there, and I saw these mountains. I said, God, these are remarkable. What are they called? And they said, the Remarkables.
I can imagine that that's... Oh, that, what remarkable... Yeah, that's a good name for them. Yeah, we'll call them that.
And I noticed when we were flying around down there that the planes always avoided the clouds. And I said, well, don't you drive through... Don't you fly right through the clouds? He goes, oh, not down here. There are rocks in those clouds.
Huh?
Yeah, because the mountains are pretty high.
Oh, I see.
Mm. Yeah, so people like to fly with visibility.
I see, because I just imagined a floating rock with a cloud around it, and that's not the right image. But I think I watched Avatar the other week, and so the idea of floating rocks is of course rocks float and have clouds fuzzing around them.
No, it's not quite so psychedelic, JP.
But still quite picturesque. So Tony, let's get to the journey bit, because this is always my favorite part of anybody's story, basically how you discover your superpowers. Now you're it says here Dr. Tony, and is that a doctor of medicine, and you know, did you do the whole regular medical doctor thing, and then what's the deal, what's the doctor?
Actually, I set out to be a medical doctor when I went to matriculated at Georgetown University, but my first year was a disaster. By my senior year of high school, I was noticing that I was having trouble concentrating, and my work just really fell off. I mean, at that point, I was in the top of my class, and a lot of the teachers noticed my work was falling off, but they knew that I was such an excellent student that they gave me good grades anyway. You know, not as good as I was used to getting, but good grades. And I ended up graduating 13th in my class. By the time I got to Georgetown, I had a very, very difficult time concentrating. It was impossible to concentrate. And I got to the point where my vision was kind of fuzzy. I couldn't really see clearly. And I couldn't hear clearly. I couldn't comprehend anything other than the most simple sentences. You know, so sitting, you know, in chemistry class or physics class at 8 o'clock in the morning, I was totally lost. I couldn't follow anything. You know, I could say, hi, how are you? Fine, how are you? But I really couldn't carry on a conversation because I couldn't follow a conversation. And I started having gastrointestinal symptoms where, you know, my stomach would knot up and I'd get this tight feeling in my chest. And it actually got to the point where occasionally the pain would be such that I would just fall flat on my face. So we had an excellent medical facility there, so I showed up and presented my symptoms, and they were pretty much at a loss. And they finally decided that, that what I had was a psychiatric problem. So they referred me off to the psychiatrist, and I told my story to the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist put his hand on my leg and said, son, you're having a homosexual crisis. And I responded, no, I don't think so, and please take your hand off my leg.
And sorry.
So after I left his office, I was walking around Wisconsin Avenue, which is just a few blocks over from Georgetown University. And this guy just walked up to me out of nowhere, and he says, you look like you got a lot on your mind. And I told him my story, you know, how I'm not able to see clearly, I can't hear clearly, I can't concentrate, you know, I'm just totally losing it. And I'm at Georgetown and I want to be a medical doctor, but I've, you know, my grades are horrible. You know, I was supposed to be getting a 3.9 QPI, which is 3.9 out of 4 for 4 years. And I was running like a 1.75, a 1.72, and a 1.552. I mean, I was really, you know, I was really being dropped out of even the possibility of going to medical school with grades like that. So this guy says, ah, not a problem. He says, I know a guy to fix you right up. And he took me in his car out to Virginia, right across the Key Bridge, and we visited this Dr. Eldeford Smith. He was a chiropractor. And I had no idea what a chiropractor was. I remember one time asking my mother when I was just a kid, maybe 5 or 6 years old, we saw a sign that said chiropractor on Main Street in Waterbury, Connecticut. And I says, "Mom, what's a chiropractor?" And he says, "Oh, it's a person that lays you down and jumps all over you, but it's supposed to make you feel better." And I thought, oh, God, you know, I had no interest.
Yeah, give me two.
Yeah, so anyway, I met this Elder Ford Smith. He was a proper-looking gentleman. And I explained my situation to him and expected the same kind of useless answers that I was getting from the medical doctors and the psychiatrists, which was the most useless of all. And Elder Ford Smith said, "Yep, I can see it." He says, "You've got an upper cervical compression. Your atlas, which is the first bone in your neck, is jammed up into your occiput." And he says, "And that can throw your brain neurology off. It can throw your whole nervous system off." And he says, "Come on, we'll take an x-ray and I'll show you." So he took an x-ray, and sure enough, the atlas was sitting way the hell off to the left and jammed up into the occiput. And I said, "Well, can that be fixed?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, not a problem." And he took me into this place.
Here it comes. I know what's coming next. Go on.
Yeah. So anyway, he laid me on my side, right? I mean, most chiropractors lay you face down, they crack your thoracics, and then they crack your low back one way and the other, and then they adjust your cervical spine one way and the other. That's called diversified technique. But he laid me on my side on this, this head thing that, kind of went up and held into place. And I really didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden he positioned his hands over my upper neck and just wailed me with a force that really scared me. I heard this resounding crack and I thought he'd broken my neck. And I jumped up off the table, in a state of alarm. And I looked at him, I went, "Oh, I can see clearly." You know, and I realized, with our subsequent conversation that I could hear clearly. Need to concentrate was back. You know, so that was my first introduction to chiropractic. You know, and I realized, well, for people that just jump all over you and it's supposed to make you feel better, he certainly had a solution when the medical doctors didn't. Okay? And that was my first thought that, hey, you know, there's something going on here. Well, anyway, my grades were so bad they made me drop out of pre-med. So I figured, well, maybe I should go into psychology and figure out why I'm so feeling so disoriented on this planet, you know, because I really felt like I didn't fit in, you know. I didn't fit in as a kid in Waterbury, and I figured it was because it's a working class town and people aren't really that sharp, and you know, and the mates that I went to school with, their idea of a good time is breaking the windows in the school or breaking into a house just because they can. You know, and I really wasn't interested in that kind of stuff. So I got into psychology, ended up getting a bachelor's of science in psychology, which was interesting because Georgetown just shifted focus. The universities are absolutely dependent upon government financing. And the government was no longer financing any psychology department that had anything to do with clinical psychology and helping people to understand who they are and get more effectively oriented to their reality where they were actually more functional and more comfortable. The department got taken over by C.B. Furster, who was the protege of B.F. Skinner. And if you're familiar with father of experimental psychology, the government was just interested in behavior. They wanted to know why it is what it is, and they wanted to know how to manipulate it and change behavior. All right, so they were very heavy into behavior programming.
My, you are popular this morning.
yeah. Popular guy, you know. So anyway, that was not at all my interest. I was more interested in the clinical, but you know, here I was. So I studied statistics and experimental psychology and learned a lot about learned about a lot about behavior and what motivates it and how to shift behavior. We did experiments with animals, and we did experiments with people. We did a lot of work with hypnosis, particularly deep hypnosis. And one thing you might find interesting, we did an experiment where we walked somebody blindfolded into a room that had a lot of objects, and we sat them in a chair facing in one direction. We took the blindfold off their eyes, had them, you know, continue to look in the same direction, put the blindfold back on, put them into a deep hypnotic trance, and in a deep hypnotic trance, they could list all the items in the room, including the ones that were behind them. I found that really fascinating.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I was actually interested in probing the dimensions of my mind that I you know, didn't even know existed. But that never worked for me. I mean, you know, a dozen people tried to hypnotize me, and I just would not go under. And I finally asked myself the question, well, how come I can't go under a hypnotic trance? And I realized that I did not feel safe allowing someone to walk around in my mind when I'm not paying full attention. You know, so I've never been hypnotized myself. But in any case, I completed that degree, and it was a couple of years later. I was off in Oregon. I was actually a minister in a Pentecostal community. I was associate minister in a halfway house that looked after or served young men between the ages of like 18 and 34. And it was during that time that I started having trouble with my left leg. I started losing the use of my left leg. I got to the point where I couldn't walk upstairs forward. I had to walk up backwards. And I really had to favor my left leg because it was extremely weak. And I felt like my groin was going to fall off on the floor. So I figured, well, there's something serious going on here. So I went to a medical doctor who then referred me to a urologist, a specialist. And he told my story to the specialist, told him my symptoms. He goes, he says, you've got a rare form of arthritis caused by an untreated gonorrhea infection. And I said, well, I never had gonorrhea. And he says, well, that's why you didn't treat it, because you didn't know you had it. And if you know anything about gonorrhea, you have a discharge, it burns when you urinate. I mean, it's the kind of disease that you probably would notice, right? But anyway, he insisted that's what it was. So I said, well, you know, shouldn't we aspirate the joint and see if we can isolate the offending gonococci? Now that should have alerted him to the fact that you know, he's not dealing with somebody who, you know, who's a babe in the woods. You know, I have a little background in science. But anyway, he overlooked my question. He just said, well, look, he says, that test is usually negative, but I know from experience that's what you have. And I says, okay, so what's the effective treatment for this? And he said, unfortunately, once gonorrhea has progressed to that point, there is no effective treatment. I said, well, can't we use antibiotics or something? He said, no. He said, they just are not effective against a case of gonorrhea that's gone to the point where it's affecting your joints. And I says, yeah, so what's the prognosis? And again, I'm using all these medical terms, but, you know, he's nonplussed. And he said, you're going to be in a wheelchair within the year, and you'll be in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. And I said, oh, I think I'll go see a chiropractor. And he said, what? And I says, yeah, I think I'll go see a chiropractor. He might have a more optimistic story than you. And he said, no, he says, you know, chiropractors can't treat gonorrhea of the joints. And I said, well, you said you can't either, so I've got nothing to lose in that regard. He goes, well, I think you'd be really, you know, ill-advised to see a chiropractor. And I said, look, last time I had a serious, what appeared to be a serious medical problem / psychiatric problem, it turned out to be a simple musculoskeletal problem that was aberrating the function of my nervous system, and a chiropractor sorted me right out. And he said, well, I think you're making a big mistake even thinking about going to a chiropractor. And I says, you know, I think, you know, despite all your education and your confidence in what you do and how you do it and the effectiveness that you have, I think you're an asshole.
Would you? Do you want to? Do you want to take that and just?
No. What I'm going to do is, and I wish I could hide it.
Can you pull the battery out?
Hold on just a second, I'll hide it.
Yes, he's going to hide it. So, while Tony, I will just reintroduce my guest. My guest tonight is Tony Minervino, and he's speaking from North Island in New Zealand, the land of the Lord of the Rings. Actually, where is Tony's website? He's got... It's probably called Tony. What's your website, Tony?
TheHealingBusiness.com.
TheHealingBusiness.com, yes. So, chiropractors.
Yes,
magicians who appear to go in little cubicles and they do magic things to you because... Yeah, I have the same experience of seeing a chiropractor who did magical things to me. Anyway, please. So you just dissed the doctor, and you said, okay. "Screw this! I'm off to a chiropractor." So what happened next?
I mean, I played with him right up to the point where he was advising me just to just to resign myself to the fact I'm going to be in a wheelchair with no possible solution. And yeah, I could only conclude the guy's an asshole, because that's a shit story, and who'd want that story? So I found out that there was a chiropractic clinic, and I didn't know exactly what that was. It turns out it's a clinic where chiropractic interns practice. In other words, these are guys that just are completing their education. They don't have a whole lot of experience. If I knew that, I probably would have been reluctant. I'd rather see someone that had some experience. But anyway, I walked into this clinic, and this young guy looks over. As I walk in, he goes, "Whoa." He says, "You fell on your ass real hard, didn't you?" And I said, "What?" He says, "You fell on your ass real hard. I can see you're favoring your left leg. And do you feel like your balls are falling off on the floor?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." And he goes, "Yeah," he says, "you had a serious low back injury." And I said, "Well, I had a motorcycle accident a couple of years back, 85 mile an hour motorcycle accident. And I got banged up pretty good." I said, "But I didn't hurt my back." And he goes, "Well, you don't know if you hurt your back unless you feel pain." And he says, "You're not getting pain. What's happening is the distortion in your low back is putting compression on your motor nerves. That's why you're losing the use of your left leg, and you feel like your groins are going to fall off on the floor." And I went, "Oh." And he goes, "Come on, we'll take an x-ray. I'll show you what I mean." So he took the x-ray. He showed me where my low back was compressed, between the lumbar and the sacral spine. And I said, "Well, can anything be done for this?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah." He says, "2 years." He says, "This is pretty serious. It's going to take quite a while." And I said, "Well, what kind of treatment is it going to need?" And he said, "Well, you're going to need to be seen 2 or 3 times a week for probably a year or more to sort this out." And I said, "That's a heck of a lot of treatment." I said, "But it's certainly a much better story than gonorrhea of the joints and sitting in a wheelchair for the rest of my life." So anyway, we started treatment. But by this time, I was, I had been offered a 4-year scholarship to the Royal Academy of Medicine in Dublin, Ireland. A friend of mine, got enthusiastic about being a doctor on the basis of my enthusiasm. So he went off to Dublin, and it turned out that he wasn't ready for the next class, but I was. And he said, "Look," he said, "I've talked to the administrator here," and he said, "if you want in, you got a 4-year scholarship." And again, I'm associate minister in this halfway house. And I stayed up all night, praying to the Lord, so to speak. Well, actually, that's exactly what I was doing, is praying to the Lord, right? And I asked, should I, take this opportunity to go to medical school, or should I stay here at this halfway house and take care of these guys that don't seem to know how to function properly? And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning when I got the answer in my head. I heard a voice in my head, and it said, "You can choose to go to medical school and start learning everything you want to know about the body, or you can stay where you are and start getting the answers to some of the questions you've been asking. And the questions I've been asking is, you know, where are we from? Why are we here? Where are we going? What's going on anyway? What's this all about? So anyway, I decided to stay where I am. And I ended up going into a seminary just across the Willamette Bridge. It was a Wesleyan Armenian seminary. I was raised Catholic, by the way. And I studied Catholic theology to some extent at Georgetown University. I studied enough theology at Georgetown University to walk into the head of the philosophy and theology department and insist that my status on my application be changed from Catholic to theist. And, you know, this older Jesuit priest looked at me and says, why do you want to change your status? And I said, because I've looked into the Bible and I've looked into Catholic theology, and I really don't see a basis in the Bible for the formation of a Catholic Church. Never mind it's being a sustaining authority on the planet. And he goes, yeah, well, why do you want to change your status? And I said, look, if the Pope knew what I was thinking, he would come personally and throw me out of the church. And I'd rather go out under my own steam. And he kind of smiled, you know, and that was my first inkling that they don't believe the story either, you know, but they're part of the system. Right? So where was I? Yes, so I went into this fundamentalist seminary and called the it was the Western States Wesleyan Armenian Seminary. And I, within a couple of weeks, I attracted the attention of one of the professors who really, really caught on to, you know, that I was pretty sharp. And he was he's beginning to encourage me to study with his mentor in Germany. And within a month, I had the history professor trying to convince me to study with his mentor. And they both were under the impression that I was going to be the next greatest thing in Wesleyan Armenian theology. You know, this is the Methodist seminary started by John Wesley. So anyway, the history prof had me address the whole history class, and I did this whole exposition on the, you know, how the, you know, the historical evolution of the church, and how there were, you know, the Catholic Church established its authority, and then in time people began to question whether or not the Catholic Church was doing the right thing. And from time to time an individual would step forth who had a higher light, a more comprehensive understanding of what's right and what's true. And John Wesley was such a man. And he gathered around himself some very stalwart and committed people, and that allowed us to have what is today known as the Methodist Church. And you know, the professor was smiling, and everybody was pretty raptured with what I was saying. And I said, but you know, that was 100 years ago. Who's carrying the light of truth and have a more comprehensive understanding today? And would we be inclined to judge them as heretic? Well, that kind of raised some questions. But in any case, they were both still enamored with me and my abilities, so they arranged for me to address the whole student body. So here I was, a first-year student at a four-year seminary, or a two-year seminary, and I was being offered the opportunity to address the whole student body, right up through to the seniors. And I was doing really well. I mean, I had people's attention. Those two professors were sitting in the back of the room with their arms folded across their chest and this small smile on their face, like, you know, the golden boy is really making a hit. I was doing really well right up until the point where I started talking about extraterrestrials. And the shit hit the fan. A senior jumped to his feet and he said, there's no such thing as extraterrestrials. And I said, look, I says, I don't have the luxury of dismissing the presence of extraterrestrials. I said, you know, it's not like I believe in them. I've met them. You know, if you ask me, are there people, are there such a thing as New Yorkers? Do you believe there's New Yorkers? Yeah, I've been in New York, I've met people, and they call themselves New Yorkers. And so I don't believe there's New Yorkers. I know there's New Yorkers. And I says, and accordingly, I've met extraterrestrials. I've met people that are very obviously from out of town. I mean, if they walk down Main Street, they'd attract a lot of attention, because there'd be no doubt in anyone's mind, these guys are not from Portland, Oregon, right? And I says, and, you know, to be intellectually honest, we have to, in matters of theology, we have to have a theology that's big enough to encompass or incorporate or allow for and acknowledge all our experience. You know, we can't discount aspects of our experience just because they don't fit in our theological box. Well, anyway, the argument I thought was quite good, but that didn't go over well at all. And I was called before a board of inquiry the next day. I was given a written summons to appear before a court of inquiry. So anyway, I was looking forward to it. I thought, you know, this is an opportunity to really have a in-depth theological discussion. And I sat there, you know, anxiously awaiting the first question, and the lead professor cleared his throat, and he asked the first question, which, again, I was very anxiously anticipating. And the question was, why were there empty beer bottles in your garbage? And I said, well, because me and my mates drank the beer that was in the bottle, and having no further use for the bottle, we put the bottles in the garbage. Why were you going through my garbage? Anyway, I was thrown out of the community. I was thrown out of the seminary, forthwith. Ostensibly because I had empty beer bottles in my garbage, but I really think it was based on theological differences.
So they hauled you before the beak, and rather than quizzing you on what you were thinking, it's what you were drinking. Well,
That's basically it.
That's just about the way things are in the world, isn't it?
Yeah, and shortly after that, I was told to go back east, and I had already done pre-med. I did pre-med before I went out to Oregon at the University of Virginia. I actually did the pre-med sciences are a two-year program, but I went to two sessions of summer school and a two-semester season, did it all in, basically I did it all in a summer and a year and another summer. Alright, I ended up with like a 3.9 like I was supposed to in the beginning. And, so I went back east, and instead of going to medical school, it's an interesting story how I got into chiropractic. I was actually staying at a friend's apartment on East 9th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. He was going to be out of town for a week, and he said, why don't you stay at my place? Because I didn't really even have my own place. I was driving taxi cab at night, and I was moving furniture in the daytime. But I was making like $4 an hour. I wasn't making enough money to have my own apartment, so I was pretty much sleeping wherever I could. And anyway, I was sleeping at his place, and let me backtrack a little bit. Because I worked in a moving company, you know, there were a lot of guys that were straining their backs and the like, so I was adjusting them. That's one thing I didn't mention in that story about Elder Ford Smith. I actually left his office and went back to the dormitory at Georgetown, and I adjusted 6 people that day because I thought, oh, I can do this. And I've been adjusting people ever since 1965. Alright? So now it's 1974. And, I went to a party, and this lady walked up to me and said, I understand that you've been, adjusting quite a few people in the neighborhood. Doing, spinal manipulations. I said, oh, yeah, you know, the word got around that I could help people, and yeah, I've been doing quite a bit of adjusting. And she says, well, I'm Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and I'm a chiropractor, and I want to tell you that you don't know what you don't know. And he says, and the people you're adjusting don't know what chiropractic really is. And so if you adjust them and that doesn't correct their problem, they're going to dismiss the possibility of going to a chiropractor because they will think they've already experienced what chiropractic can do. And I said, you know, you're right. I says, can we talk further? So we sat down and we had a talk. And then it was a few weeks later and it was coming on winter, when I was at Marty Buckman's apartment. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, it was just pounding on the door. And it was a hellacious night. It was cold. It was snowing. It was just a nasty night to be out. And I opened the door. Here's this Dr. Georgiana Donadio. And she said, God woke me up from my warm bed, got me to go in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, got me to travel all the way down here to the Lower East Side, this slum hole, and tell you he wants you to be a chiropractor and he wants you to do it now. And she slammed the door and walked out. So that's basically how I got into chiropractic. You know, I was invited to a meeting, and there was this Dr. Joe Giacalone, and he was heading the meeting, and he's a real flash kind of guy. And when I went into the men's room, he happened to be at the next urinal, and he goes, my name is Dr. Joe Giacalone. He says, I have a big chiropractic office in Brooklyn, and I'd like you to come down and see my operation. He said, if you come down, yeah, who knows what'll happen. If you don't come down, fuck you. Who needs you? Sorry if that got bleeped, but that was a quote.
Sorry, we don't have a bleep machine. You have to do the bleeping yourselves. But anyway, I think on Studio B, it's not so bad because it doesn't go out on FM stereo stations. Well, we don't know yet. Things might be improving. However,
I don't use that as much,
but yeah, I get your point. All right, so let's just keep going because I can see where it's leading.
Yeah, so in any case, I applied for chiropractic school at New York Chiropractic College, and I got denied. So they denied me admission. So I went to Joe Giacalone's office, and he goes, hey, how's it going with applying for chiropractic school? And I said, they denied me admission. And he goes, really? I says, yeah. So I called Western States Chiropractic College in Oregon, and they said I could start in the next class. And he goes, hold on a second. And he picks up the phone, and he calls the New York Chiropractic College. He goes, hi, you know, Betty or whatever her name was. Let me talk to Ernie Napolitano. And Ernest Napolitano was the head of New York Chiropractic College. And it turned out that Ernest was out of town at some big national convention or something. So he says, look, let me talk to the admissions officer. So he got the admissions officer on the line. He goes, look, says, this is Joe Giacalone. Dr. Joe Giacalone. He says, you know, I'm a major contributor to the school, and I'm a major supporter of New York Chiropractic College. He says, I have a young man sitting across from me who's absolutely brilliant. He says that the talent that this kid has would blind you. It's that bright. And he says, and there's been some kind of a clerical error. He's been denied admission. And, he just called Western States College, and they've said, oh, sure, you could start in the next class. He goes, I want this kid in New York. And he says, and if he doesn't get accepted in this year's class, I'm going to withdraw every dime and every bit of support that I give to the school. And he put his hand over the receiver, and he says, they won't dare deny me. And I got a call that very afternoon, and they said, hello, this is the admissions office from New York Chiropractic College. We'd like to extend an invitation to you to attend this year's class. Is there any way I can help you smooth out the details?
Isn't that nice?
That's how I got into chiropractic school.
Right. So listen, Tony. My show is a lot about the inner connections. Your story tonight. Now, about an hour and a half ago, I've been limping around the house for the last 3 weeks, favoring my left leg.
Do you feel like your balls? you may have advanced gonorrhea kicks.
Well, yeah, that's probably more like it. But don't tell me girlfriend, because she'd murder me. But, you know, this is a really interesting thing. So here's the thing. Chiropractic is not... What is it?
Chiropractic.
Chiropractic, okay. It's not new. This is something that has been going on for many thousands of years, perhaps in secret traditions. But
yeah, it goes back to the Egyptians for sure.
Well, here's the thing. When I was laying there, I contacted the lifetime of me that was a chiropractor, because my girlfriend actually said, you know, once you were a chiropractor. That because, you know, this is really I'll tell you the story in a minute, but I was laying there thinking about chiropractic and how I connected with this, because I'm very natural with it, but she only lets me touch her, you know, so I can't touch anybody anyway. But I can really unhook somebody, you know, physically, and I suppose in some ways mentally too.
So you free people's bones up yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the same thing happened to me. I had a bike crash 29 years ago in 1986. I was in a coma for 3 weeks. I broke my right arm, my ribs, my pelvis. Dislocated my knee, both hips, my left shoulder. And in the last 4 weeks, all of those injuries, all of those sites that I've just mentioned, have been absolutely killing me.
Uh-huh.
And it's like something's happening that is pulling all of this stuff back out, I hope. Or I'm just going to die. But I think it's the first one, because I don't think I'm going to die. Sometimes I feel like I want to die, but that's another... Anyway, long story. But
what should focus on expand? So I'd say focus on the former.
Yeah. So, and it is. It's about expanding, and here's the thing that I've been... I'm saying it over and over again, that's what I've been saying it, is that when we receive trauma, we should really ring like a bell, and just kind of ring all the way out, and fine. But what happens most of the time is we receive the trauma and then we lock our bodies, and we don't let the reverberation ring out, and that's what we hold in our bodies all of our lives.
Yeah, we resist it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the process of releasing that, because I realized that I'm still holding things from 29 years ago. I'm still holding shock in my body from 29 years ago, and this is part of the release of that, of those things, and the release of a massive injury that I got right in the middle of my glute, right? It got all the nerves and the tendons and everything locked together, and that's when I discovered the healing, not only chiropractic, but also psychic healing, because I went to a psychic healer because nobody else could help. And he just kind of touched my leg, and like in half a minute, I didn't feel any more pain.
Nice. Now, was the chiropractor of any help at all?
Well, after that, I was still kind of hobbling around, you know. He'd only did, because this was like a nerve pain that I was experiencing, that was like, you know what a nerve pain, if you listen, if everybody's listening to Sean David Morton talking about his teeth, right, that's what nerve pain feels like. It's overwhelming, and I had it in my butt. And this man touched my leg. I kind of like dusted it off, and half a minute later, I felt no pain.
Right, but you still had weakness in that leg.
Yeah, there's still blocked traffic, basically.
Was there pain when you walked?
Yeah, because the pain happened when I swung my leg forward.
Right. Okay.
It stretched the tendon, which pulled the hamstring, which dragged on the nerve, which hurt like heck.
Sure, even after the psychic healing, right?
No, that was before the psychic healing. But after the psychic healing, I don't know whether I've masked the pain or what would be the pain, because it's not real pain anyway, or whether I've actually kind of rerouted the nervous system somehow. What's happening is that everything's firing at once, so I'm getting a pull and a release kind of signal going on at the same time, which is locking up my leg.
Now, are you talking in the present or right after the?
This is what's happening right now.
I see. Okay,
yeah.
Jumping around.
As this is coming, this is coming back around, you know, after 29 yep. years. So anyway, as I said, I was thinking about chiropractic about an hour ago, and how if I can connect with that past life of mine, I can stretch myself back out again, and I did. So I'm feeling a little better now. This is all—it's all very relevant and interesting that you had the same injury, or he had an injury where you were favoring your left leg, and this is the thing. Nobody, obviously those guys who were at the chiropractic college, who could see people out of their balance, but nobody can tell when you got a back problem. You know, you're walking down the road and you're a young person, you know, you're in your 30s or your 40s, and you feel like a cracked egg that if anybody bumps into you, you'll just kind of glip.
Your cushions, because you don't have any strength.
Yes.
Yeah, and if your back gets into a certain position, boom, everything goes. Your legs go, everything goes.
Yeah, yep, and you're basically useless, you know, so... That's not good for your self-esteem.
Yep. Let me just comment on what's going on, okay? Everything that shows up in your life is perfect, exactly the way it is, and it shows up in perfect timing, and is designed to create an experiential context within which you can access knowledge that it's time for you to access. So your accident is not an accident. It's a situation that was... put in place on your timeline by your higher self in order for you to have an experience which would open you up to a certain dimension of knowledge. Now, has you completely exhausted the knowledge that experience was there to teach you, there would have been no residual. But, you know, your consciousness was only capable of perceiving a certain measure of that knowledge, and now that whole thing is coming back for you to access the next dimension of knowledge. Once you get the total message that whole event was designed to teach you, then the situation can pass. In 1994, I had just gotten certified in network spinal analysis, which at that time was called network chiropractic. It's a much more subtle approach to chiropractic. And it has to do with entraining the nervous system so that the body is self-correcting, all right? And eventually, you know, you're self-correcting. You don't need to see a doctor, so to speak, all right? And, you know, I was adjusting this one patient or assessing them and working on them. And I realized that, you know, this patient was back in my office, for treatment because he was so impressed with the results he got 18 months ago, after he'd had an auto accident, that, he's back in my office again 18 months later, having had another auto accident. Okay. And I began to realize that, you know, while my patients were real excited about the results they get, they keep showing up periodically with the same or similar injuries from oftentimes the same or similar circumstances. And I realized that something wasn't shifting. You know, I was shifting the bones. I was freeing up the articulations in the spine and the whole body and restoring proper nerve function throughout their body. And most times people, by the time they completed therapy, they'd be in better shape than they were before the accident, okay? But something wasn't shifting because they kept coming back with the same or similar accidents or same or similar injuries. And I realized what wasn't shifting was their consciousness. So in 1994, I began to explore the relationship between consciousness and what's showing up, not only in the physical body, but in a person's whole reality. You know, what's causing them to perceive things the way they perceive them, what's causing them to make the choices that they're making and engage in the activities that they engage in, and, you know, and experience sometimes negative results as a result of those choices and those activities. And that led to a very interesting discovery. If you'll just indulge me, I was out in San Diego visiting some friends, and, you know, I was now a successful chiropractor in Waterbury, Connecticut, making about, you know, $30,000 a month, and, you know, doing quite well. And while I used to be a real slim, sleek guy in a Speedo bathing suit on the beach, I was enjoying the Italian food in Waterbury, and, you know, we have 6 Italian bakeries that people argue over who makes the best bread. We have like 50 pizza parlors, and everybody argues who makes the best pizza.
Nung, 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 nung.
Yeah, you got it. So what happened was I, you know, put on my Speedo bathing suit, had on my Speedo bathing suit, and was about to go to the beach, and I noticed in the reflective windows in the side of my Jeep Cherokee that I had this big gut hanging over my Speedo. And I thought, oh, God. So I reached, you know, because I was wearing 3-piece suits in Connecticut, so it wasn't a big deal. So I reached in the Jeep to get a T-shirt, and this voice in my head said, you don't wear T-shirts on the beach. If you don't like the way you look, change it. And in that instant, I realized that I had to develop an exercise technology that would allow me to get fit, that was fast, fun, effective, and required no equipment. Because I'm a Pisces, I'm very indulgent, and if there's any excuse to avoid exercise, I'll take it. Okay?
So, yes, I'll tell you all about it, because me too is a Pisces. And
okay. Do you know where?
Do I know where?
As you know, what of I speak?
I know that where, which whereof thereof. Verily.
You know, by the way, I came up with a tentative conclusion somewhere along the way, or a tentative hypothesis somewhere along the way that we're not an individual, we're an organization. Because if we were an individual, when we decided I'm going to start exercising tomorrow, we would find ourselves exercising tomorrow. But the fact of the matter is, we say, I'm going to start exercising tomorrow. And, you know, weeks could go by and periodically you go, I'm going to start exercising tomorrow. But somehow you never get around to exercising. So I think there's more than one of us in there, you know, and while you, the speaker, may make the decision, I'm going to start exercising tomorrow, the other people in there go, nah, I don't feel like exercising. You know, maybe I'll exercise, you know, tomorrow, but not today. Right, but in any case, I went up on the roof of a condominium at the beach in San Diego, and I downloaded the half-hour version, or what became the half-hour version, of the transformational workout, which is one of the four Metatron essential technologies that were produced.
Hey, Tony, don't go away. And everybody, don't go away. We'll be back in a few minutes. A few minutes. And we will tell you more things about stuff with Tony Minervino.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
On the go? Still want to listen? Don't have one of those fancy phones with too many buttons. Don't know what an app is? Or you don't even care? Well, we got you here at Revolution Radio. Now you can dial in 24-7 to listen to our shows. We have a number for Studio A and Studio B, and best of all, it's free. Don't forget, your carrier charges for your cell phone provider may apply, though, so check with your cell provider to make sure. So ready? Here you go. Get a pen. Here's the number. Studio A is 712-432-6958, and Studio B is 716-748-0112. Thank you very much for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello, hello, hello. Yeah, anyway, meanwhile, Journeys with JP here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, at Wolf Spirit Radio, and, oh, I forgot, hang on a second, at... welcome to our Tina Sow listeners and indeed Scottish Zombies on the Land. If anybody's still on the site, it's quite late at night and it's 2 a.m. Anyway, any late birds here at the Celtic sites here, welcome to Journeys with JP. Also on Ever Beyond Radio. And if you want to listen to any of my archives, and I've got 4 years of this stuff, and it's very interesting. I've got some really interesting people. You can come to my site for free and listen to any of those. If you want to listen to large amounts of Wolf Spirit Radio archives, you can come and listen to the subscribe to the Wolf Spirit Radio archive group, and that's very measly sum a month. And then indeed, freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio, as we are here on Studio B, soon to be 128 kilobytes per second. 128 kilobits per second in stereo. That's as good as your MP3 player. You have no idea how good that sounds until you're listening in stereo on a pair of headphones, and suddenly you hear it's not like listening on AM, it's like listening on the better than FM. However, we're still talking on Skype. So, who knows? One day we might get a flawless communication. My guest tonight is Tony Minervino, speaking from the North Island of New Zealand. And the last word I heard as you drifted off into the fixed break, if you could like kind of wheel back a little bit, but I heard the word Metatron.
By the way, I love your intermission material. It's really worth listening to.
it's wild. I mean, it's really amazing. All this electric guitar, that's Mike Ringley, who who built the station. He plays the amazing guitar.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, Metatron Ascension Technology. It all began with the transformational workout. And that all began because I didn't like the way I looked in the Speedo bathing suit. Alright? But I went up on the roof of a condominium, right in Ocean Beach, California, with the intention of creating a exercise program that was fast, fun, effective, required no equipment, and go. And immediately I downloaded what is now the half-hour transformational workout, and it consists of 13 exercises with a special kind of breathing. And again, I just downloaded it. I just did one exercise after another, started breathing a certain way, and it took about a half hour, certainly no more than a half hour. And as soon as I completed it, I knew it was complete, and I felt so good that I felt slim. I felt fit. I felt good. And I ran downstairs to look in the mirror to see if I looked differently. And, you know, except for the smile on my face, I didn't look any different. But whenever I wasn't looking in a mirror, I felt slender. I felt fit. I felt like I wanted to feel. And I actually had this self-image of me being slim, even though I wasn't. And that allowed me to experience how powerful visualization is. And within a short period of time, my life had really shifted. Like in a couple of weeks, at that point I was in Ocean Beach, California, and I'd opened up the San Diego Life Center, and I was no longer doing personal injury work like I did in Connecticut, making $30,000 a month, you know, and charging people $600 for the first visit and $135 for follow-up visits and $600 an hour to talk to your attorney and $650 an hour door-to-door to present your case in court, and $375 for reports and the like. Now, I was no longer doing that kind of work. I decided, you know, one day I was walking out of my office in Waterbury and decided, you know, I can't continue to do this work. It's killing me, not physically, but spiritually. As there's something huge going on in the world and I need to be part of it. So I turned my office over to another doctor and went off to San Diego, and in Ocean Beach, I built a big, beachfront office, huge. I mean, I thought I was going to be so huge that I'd need a traffic cop to handle the traffic. And I even installed 5 phone lines to handle the phone traffic. And as it turned out, I didn't attract any more patients, you know, than I attracted in Waterbury. But in Waterbury, the average patient was worth between $8,000 and $12,000, and I decided to get rid of all the unnecessary examinations and reports and all that, and get rid of all these kinds of insurance work, and I was just going to focus on providing the service that actually helps the person, you know, which is, you know, whatever therapy I was using, and charge just $45. So the average patient, instead of being worth between $8,000 and $12,000 in income, was worth somewhere around $100 to maybe $250. And that didn't work out too good financially. But anyway, 2 weeks into the transformational workout, this lady, older lady, shows up at the office, and she said, "Doctor, what do you think of energy fields?" And I said, "You're talking about the energy fields around the body?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, it's an interesting concept, but I don't know anything about it." And she smiled, and, you know, we chatted, and she left. And within a couple of weeks, I was doing the workout at my condominium, and I opened my eyes, and the whole room was filled with, like, a network. It was like I could see lines of energy connecting me to everything in the room, you know, and the furniture, the paintings, the plants. I saw lines connecting me to the trees outside, and for the first time I experienced visually that we really are all connected. And then I immediately realized, well, we're really all one thing. We're all part of a whole. And, you know, and that really shifted my understanding of reality and what it's about. And, that very day I was in the office, and this patient came in, told me they had a problem, you know, with their back or their neck or whatever it was. And, well, their back and their neck. And, I laid them face down, and I was about to do my normal combination of network chiropractic with my expert adjusting skills. And all of a sudden I saw that they had a field around their body, and it was like a grid. It was like an energy grid. And I could see that the grid was distorted in certain areas. You know, kind of like, how a screen door would distort if you stuck a pencil through the screen. You know, you'd see this nice grid work, and then you'd see this like hole, right? Now I didn't know what was distorting the field, but I could see that there was something in there distorting the field. And I thought, well, you know, let's see what happens if I take it out. So, you know, I'm looking at something that's obviously non-physical. So I decided I'll stick in my non-physical fingers and take it out. So I did. I extended these non-physical fingers from my fingertips, and I went in there, and I took it out, and it was kind of a live thing, you know. It kind of had a wiggle to it, you know. And anyway, I passed it off to whoever is able to do what you're supposed to do with those things. I mean, again, I'm very new at this, so I didn't really know what I was doing. And as soon as I took what was distorting the field out, the field would go into coherence in that area. So I just kept reaching around and pulling this stuff out and passing it off to who knows whom, who was doing who knows what with it. And when I was complete, I saw that the grid was in total coherence. And I thought, and I just told the patient, I said, okay, we're done, you know, and just stand up. And I said, how do you feel? And he goes, oh, my neck's not stiff anymore. My low back is, oh, wow. And he starts bending over and twisting one way or another. He goes, I feel great. All the pain's gone. And I said, it is? And he goes, yeah. And he says, you didn't even touch me. And, you know, because, you know, I was sticking non-physical fingers into his non-physical energy fields. Yeah, I hadn't touched him. And that opened up a whole new dimension for me. And I began to see things in my practice that that I never saw when I was moving bones. I mean, at one point, I was at a party, and this big, huge psychic friend of mine, he's a big, big, huge black guy. He walked over to me. He says, hey, would you treat Gus? And I said, who's Gus? He goes, oh, that guy over there. And I said, well, what's the story? He says, well, he's got cancer. And I said, yeah, sure. And you know, and Gus came over, and we introduced ourselves. I said, look, Gus, you know, I do this energy kind of work. I call it, I forget if I was calling it holographic healing then, or I think I was calling it genetic re-engineering, because I thought that's what I was doing. I was genetically re-engineering the person. And I said, look, I don't treat any disease, I says, or condition. I said, but what I can do is I can go into your fields, and I can take out the programs of consciousness, the beliefs, the ways of thinking that are creating what you no longer choose to have in your life. I said, now the potential is you could let go of everything, in which case you would even let go of whatever program was causing your cancer, and your cancer would just disappear. I mean, it won't necessarily heal over time. It'll literally disappear. And I says, but, you know, I can't decide what programs you should let go of. That's totally your choice. And I will only see in your fields the programs you're willing to let go of. So again, your choice is you can let go of a little, or you can let go of everything. But know that I'm not treating your cancer or any other disease or condition. Do you understand? And he goes, yeah. I said, okay, lay down. Now, I didn't have a table. I was at a party, so he laid on the floor. And, you know, I did my thing. And a couple minutes later, because it only takes a couple minutes, as you'll see later, if you want me to do a session with you on the air here, I said, okay, Gus, we're complete. And he jumped up. Now, when he laid down on the floor, he was very careful about how he laid down. But when I said, okay, we're done, he jumped up off the floor, and he looked at me, and he says, I feel better. And I said, oh, that's good. And he says, you know, I've got an appointment tomorrow to go to the hospital. They're going to do some heroic kind of surgery to see if they can wall off the cancer that's beginning to spread throughout my body. He says, I have kidney cancer, and it's totally infiltrated one of my kidneys, and it's spread to my leg, my shoulder, and three places in my spine. And, you know, I'm already overdue to be dead. And he says, so they're scheduling me for this Herculean surgery to see if they can, you know, give me a little bit more time. And I said, okay. I said, well, you know, give me a call, you know, tomorrow after you've been to the hospital, let me know how things go. So anyway, the next day at 5 o'clock, he calls me up. He's all excited. He said, look, he said, they brought me into the operating room. The anesthesiologist took my blood pressure because they need to take your blood pressure before they administer the anesthesia. And his blood pressure, because he had kidney cancer, was 200 over 159. But when the anesthesiologist took his blood pressure, it was 120 over 80, smack normal. So the anesthesiologist was concerned, so he did it again, and it was 120 over 80. So he calls over the surgeon. The surgeon says, oh, the cuff must be defective. Bring in another cuff. So they brought in another blood pressure cuff, and sure enough, it was 120 over 80. So the surgeon called off the surgery because they couldn't figure out what the hell was going on here. And what followed was Gus was subjected to 8 hours of tests. And at the end of 8 hours, the whole surgical team, the anesthesiologist, the surgeon, the nurses, the whole team, showed up in his hospital room, and the surgeon said, look, Gus, we don't know what's going on here, but you don't have cancer. And he said, and the cancer that, you know, you don't have cancer anywhere that we can tell. And the cancer that was throughout your kidney, that seems to be gone, but there's a solid mass inside your kidney. We don't know what that is. But we'd like to schedule an operation to take it out because we think that not only can we take out that mass, but we think we can save that kidney. And Gus said, no, I don't think so. He says, you didn't get me this far. He said, I think I'll wait and see what happens. So Gus agreed to go back 3 weeks later for follow-up. And 3 weeks later, they took an MRI, and the mass that was inside the kidney was now sitting next to the kidney. So that's a solid object passing through a solid object. And they said, you know, we don't know how that happened, but we did a biopsy, and there's no cancer there. So your body would just resorb it. We don't have to do surgery to take that out. But we want to refer you to an orthopedic surgeon, because where the cancer was in your spine, you don't have any bone. And we don't even know how you're able to stand up, let alone walk. So we want to refer you over to a surgeon to have a rod put in your spine to stabilize it. And Gus said, nah, I don't think so.
Right.
he said, I think I'll ask Tony if he thinks the bone will fill in now that the cancer's gone. And that was the end of his hospital experience. 3 months later, he got married. And that's the last time I heard from Gus. You know, and those kinds of things did not happen in my personal injury chiropractic practice in Waterbury, Connecticut. You know, so I began to see things that were pretty amazing. And that doesn't mean that everybody that comes into me with cancer walks out cancer free, because I realize that, you know, not everyone wants to be free of their cancer. You know, because again, everything that shows up in your life is perfect exactly the way it is, and it's designed to create an experiential context in which you can access the knowledge that's going to enable you to continue on your journey from point A, where you start, to point B, which is the planned objective for this lifetime. And, you know, I don't have the ability to heal anybody. I just know how to take programs out of your fields. And I can only take out the programs that you're ready to let go of. And you inherently will always comply with your higher self's plan. So if your higher self's plan is for you to get the big aha just before you die of terminal cancer, then there's nothing that me or anyone else is going to do that's going to abort that plan. Now, that's just my point of view based on my experience. That's the best I come up with. You know, I'm not trying to tell people the way it is. I'm just saying this is the way I see it based on my observation and my experience. And so far, my experience has not contradicted that that hypothesis. Okay? But I have seen some amazing things. I had a guy in Auckland walk in with, he had terminal bone cancer. And he called me up, and he had heard about me through the grapevine. And he said, look, he says, the pain that I'm experiencing has gotten so severe that the morphine they're giving me isn't even taking the edge off. He goes, I'm in total agony. You know, can you help me? And I said, well, you know, this is what I do, and this is how I do it, and these are the possibilities. And I said, if you'd like to come in, you know, I'd be glad to work with you, and we'll see what happens. So anyway, he came in, and we talked. And basically what I do is in my initial conversation with someone, I meet them in the tone that they're at. So if they walk in depressed and, you know, low tone, I'll walk up and say, hi, I'm Dr. Tony Minervino. God, the pain must be horrible. You know, and I meet them where they're at. And then in the context of the conversation, I'll gradually raise the frequency, raise the tone. And they'll just naturally match it. You know, I might, you know, tell jokes, I might do whatever. But when they've reached a frequency where I can tell that they're receptive and they're clear and they're focused and they're present, then I say, okay, well, this is what we can do. I can go into the energy fields. I can take out any program that's creating what you don't want in your life any longer that you're ready to let go of. So are you ready to let go of any program that's creating what you don't want, even if you don't know what it is? And they go, yeah. I said, okay, fine. And now what would you like to achieve as a result of today's session? And he said, I'd like to be pain-free. And I said, okay. Now, I don't offer them suggestions. I just say, what would you like to achieve? And he said, I'd like to be pain-free. So I said, okay. And he laid down on the table. I did the energy thing. I call that light body healing. That's the second Metatron Ascension technology, the first being the transformational workout. And, you know, a couple of minutes later, I said, okay, stand up. How do you feel? And he goes, the pain is gone. Thank God. And he walked out of the office pain-free and died 2 months later of terminal bone cancer. Right? And, you know, somebody asked, well, why didn't he say I want to be cancer-free? I don't know. You know, I don't have the answers to why. You know, but that's part of how I came to the hypothesis that, you know, the higher self has a plan. Every individual inherently is going to know to go along with the plan. And it's not for me or anybody else to interfere with the plan. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. We have to... And there's another thing about this, is we want our loved ones to be healed.
Yes,
or
we
so
do.
We think,
mm-hmm.
Don't we? Yet
well,
that
yes.
Can be partly why they're ill.
Yeah, I mean, there could be many contributing factors. But people get sick because... it's time for them to have that experience in order to access the knowledge that it's time for them to access. There's no such thing as something showing up in your life that's bad and wrong or extraneous. Everything shows up perfectly and in perfect timing. And it's all designed to move you in the direction of expanded consciousness. And at the end of the day, no matter what you do in life, no matter what you accomplish, no matter what you accumulate, the only thing you're going to take is your consciousness. Now, this is the big difference between chiropractic and medicine. In medicine, consciousness is considered to be the result of the biochemical activity of the physical body. So once the physical body dies, the consciousness ceases to exist. Chiropractic, on the other hand, recognizes that humans are spirits having physical experiences. And chiropractic was originally created by Dwight David Palmer back in 1879 as a means of freeing up the spine to normalize the function of the nervous system, which would enable the brain to effectively communicate with every cell in the body and create the body functioning so perfectly, so smoothly, that the being's attention, no longer being drawn to the body, was able to expand and begin to interface with non-physical and extraterrestrial intelligence. That's what chiropractic was founded to accomplish. Quite obviously, that was never accepted in mainstream. You know, chiropractic is defined by the American Chiropractic Association as a non-invasive medical modality for neck and low back pain.
Slightly diluted.
Yeah, in the books of D.D. Palmer, he doesn't talk about addressing pain at all. It's all about consciousness. All right. So to the chiropractor, healing has to do with above, down, inside, out, and the chiropractic adjustment has to do with freeing up the nervous system so that the expanded energy above can come down into the body and heal the body. Above, down, inside, out. That's what it's all about. And chiropractors as a group of health professionals have a tendency to constantly be expanding the envelope. You know, Donny Epstein developed network chiropractic, which has evolved into network spinal analysis. And, you know, it's far more effective than cracking bones, you know, only. You know, B.J. Palmer, Dwight David Palmer's son, said you could get most people well, 80% of your patients well, just by smacking them in the backside with a coal shovel. We are more subtle now. We're more evolved. We're more sensitive, you know. And that type of chiropractic just isn't suitable for a lot of people today. And so chiropractic practice has been evolving through the experience of the individual chiropractors. And like myself, I mean, there was 4 or 5 years where I did not do any physical adjusting at all. Because if I did physical adjusting, neither me nor the patient, neither I nor the patient would be able to tell what's creating the result. Is it the energy work or is it the adjustment? Okay? So I didn't do any physical adjusting at all. I mean, I had a guy in Auckland come to me and he called me up. He says, "Hey, my neck's all screwed up and I need you to crack it." And I said, "Well, let me tell you about the work I do." He goes, "Yeah, I know the work you do. I saw you like 4 or 5 years ago." And I said, "Look, if you saw me 4 or 5 weeks ago, you don't know what I'm doing today. You know, let me tell you about what I do." So, anyway, he said, "Okay." And I said, and I told him about the energy fields and taking out the programs. He goes, No. He says, No. I don't want any of that voodoo junk. I just want you to adjust my neck so I can feel good." And I said, "Look, I'll tell you what. Let me do the voodoo stuff. And if your neck feels good, then great. And if it doesn't, then I'll crack your neck." And he goes, "Yeah, okay, fair enough." So he laid down, I did the voodoo stuff, the light body healing. And after a couple of minutes, I said, "Okay, stand up. How do you feel?" And he twisted his neck one way and the other, and he said, "I really don't believe it." He says, "My neck is fine." He says, I don't believe it. What the heck is this?" All right. Now, he didn't say that exactly, but I didn't want to bleep out again. All right. So that's light body healing. So we have the transformation workout, the light body healing, and then what I do with my clients is I teach them the third technology, which is called belief system restructuring. And I tell him, I said, look, if you want to continue the healing process, you can do what I did. You, whenever you feel something you don't like, or you're not comfortable with, just acknowledge it for sure. But stop and ask yourself, what am I thinking right now? And whatever whatever thought comes up, even if the thought is, I don't know what the heck I'm thinking, that's the thought. And then ask, what must I believe right now to be thinking this? And whatever belief comes up, no matter how precious it is, even if it's a belief that you base your whole worldview on, or no matter how ridiculous it is because it's so disparate from what you really critically think is so, you know, whatever it is, that's the belief that's setting the frequency of your mind, that's causing you to have the types of thoughts you're having, that's causing you to project the holographic reality that your senses are feeding back to you is the way it is. Because there really is no such thing as the way it is. There's only how you perceive it. And how you perceive it is based upon your choices and your choice of what belief you focus your consciousness through is not really available to your consciousness, because we're dealing with the unconscious. I says your unconscious is programmed with beliefs that got installed before the age of 7. You know, when you were in a hypnagogic state, you were small, you were frail, you were vulnerable, and you were dependent on the people around you for your support and your protection and your sustenance. So you were on alert, and everything that everyone said about the way it is, you took it in like, that's the way it is. That became your truth. And it didn't matter if today you hear something that's 180 degrees opposite of what you heard yesterday. They're both in your subconscious mind or your unconscious mind as the truth. And a belief is really only an idea that's been raised to the status of a truth without any necessary evidence to support it. I said, and the unconscious mind is running the show 95% of the time, according to my buddy Bruce Lipton, who's a cell biologist. And he's written books that have been espousing the whole concept of epigenetics, that it's not your genes that determine what shows up in your life. It's the environment. It's the epigenetics. It's your thoughts. It's your feelings. It's your feeling that, it's your sense of what's going on in your environment.
The okay? Soup that we float around in.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Carl Jung, the eminent psychologist who was the protege of, and became the arch enemy, the nemesis of Sigmund Freud, said, until the unconscious is made conscious, it will run your life and you will call it fate. So in belief system restructuring, what I'm giving people is a simple, very simple technology to deprogram or reprogram the unconscious mind. Okay, simply by noticing, not your thinking, because, you know, we think thousands of thoughts an hour.
Tony, did I lose you? Blue, blue. Oh. No. Mm-hmm. Who have I lost? Have I lost everybody? Everybody's gone dim. Yep. It's my side. Bloody fire. Yeah, well, there you go. Tony, you with me? Tony, you there? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Right, okay, Firefox. Go away. Let's just reconnect then. Well, sorry about that. I seem to have got disconnected. I don't know where we've left off with Tony. Let's just hope he can pick the call back up again. So yes, very interesting, the whole chiropractic idea. Yeah, let's just bring him. He's having a little trouble. There you are, Tony. Sorry about that. Nope, he's not. Let's try once more. Bring him into the call. We lost him. Right, okay, hang on, I'm just going to reset that call. And, yep, I'm back on the air. We seem to have lost Tony for the moment. We are going all around the world. It is 1:30 in the afternoon in New Zealand, in the North Island. And we've just lost him. Good old Skype. Yeah, still. I'm gonna wait until he's returned. Let's see if he's online on Facebook. And yeah, now he's offline on Facebook too. So let's see. Maybe there was a little bit of a glitch in the communications of the North Island. Oh, right, there we go. So let's just bring him back in, and we'll continue the show. So, with Dr. Tony Minervino. Okay. Well, it says you're busy. All right. Cool. Let's see. Ah, Tony!
Yeah, I connected with you this time.
There we go. Excellent.
Wasn't working.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting back to where we left off, all beliefs are true. All beliefs are equally true. And there's no truth, there's no belief that's more true than any other belief, including its opposite. And
that's
all
true.
Beliefs are all beliefs are equally valid, because all beliefs will create the perception of a reality that feeds back to you the evidence that the belief is true. And all beliefs are equally available. Paradoxically, however, if you judge a belief as bad and wrong, you are more inclined to choose the belief that you judged is bad and wrong than you are to choose its opposite. All right? And that's why judgment is such an issue. Judgment is probably the last hurdle to enlightenment. You know, so for instance, if you're trying to not do something, and you believe that not doing it is good, but doing it is bad, it makes it very difficult to stop doing it. All right, that's why I tell people, don't focus on stopping something, focus on what's next. You know, I spoke at an AA meeting in San Diego, and after the talk, everybody gathered around me, and the question everybody had in mind was, how did you get to be so positive, so enthusiastic about things? And I said, well, to begin with, I never give up anything. I do what I want to do when I want to do it, as much as I want to do it and as long as I want to do it. And when I'm done doing it, I'm on to what's next. So I don't give anything up. I just move on to what's next. So my attention is always focused on what I'm doing now, not stop doing something that I did in the past. I said the idea of standing up and saying, hi, I'm Tony. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 27 years. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, why still describe yourself as an alcoholic if you haven't had a drink in 27 years? Why not describe yourself in terms of what you are doing now? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with the Paris as well. It's a very interesting thing. The idea of thought and belief and truth and reality. So if all beliefs are equally valid, how do you determine what is the difference between a truth and a belief? I mean, or are there no truths at all? Is there a line?
Yeah, that's a good question. Look, beliefs are just beliefs, and the truth tends to... there may be transcendent a priori truths, okay? I don't know. But in my experience, things that I thought were true at one point in my life, I don't believe are true any longer, because my experience has, for me, invalidated those things that I used to consider true. I mean, like when I went into the seminary, I went in to learn more about the Bible and learn more about God. And within a few months, I was reading the Bible and I was thinking, they got it all back to front. it's very difficult to tell who the good guys and the bad guys really are. I mean, who's the good guy? The guy that says, I'm God, do what I tell you or you're going to go to hell? Or the guy that says, hey, why don't you bite from this apple and you begin to learn about how things work? You know, and, you know, I began to really question everything. I mean, I got so heavily into and so intensely engaged in Christianity that within a year I went right out the other end. You know, and now I'm of the opinion that there's no such thing as a personal God sitting up on a throne ready to judge you. To me, God is if you want to use the word God, which I don't, you know, I only use it because it's in the vernacular, is the consciousness of the whole thing. You know, that we're all part of this whole thing. And, you know, I'm a conscious, you're conscious, everything's conscious. Even this computer's conscious, everything's conscious. And the sum total of that consciousness is, you know, if you will, that's the big consciousness. That's my concept of what God is. And, you know, and I don't believe in the void where God created everything. Because the void is a field where there's nothing. And if you had a whole lot of nothing, why would you need a place to put it? I mean, it's a nothing. Nothing doesn't need a place to go. So to me, this whole reality that we experience really exists nowhere but in our minds. And that what we're experiencing on a day-to-day basis, in our day-to-day experience is the waking dream. And when we go to sleep and we're in another reality where we're running around and doing stuff, our bodies are actually laying in bed, you know, cuddled up under the covers. But yet we're experiencing a very real reality. And when we wake up, we go, oh, that was just a dream. But this is reality. Now, this is the waking dream. And I think we wake up from this dream through a process that most people know as, well, that most people take, a process called death. You know, and while those of us who are still in the waking dream think that, oh, how tragic it is that this person has died, you know, in fact, they just woken up and realized, oh, that was just a dream. You know, and now I'm in another reality. And chances are I'm going to wake up from this dream and be in another reality altogether. You know, I myself experience being in different dimensions of reality. And when I come back, you know, I have a story about it. But I'm real clear at this point, having had many interdimensional experiences or other dimensional experiences, I'm quite clear that what I came back with is really a story. It's not necessarily an accurate analysis or description of what really took place in that other dimension, because what took place may not be translatable into a third density mind. You know, so, you know, the only way that we're, you know, it said the truth will set you free. But it's nothing I say that will set you free. It's not my truth that will set you free. It's your truth. And the only way you come to an understanding of what your truth is by paying attention to what's going on around you and using your mind to analyze and critically evaluate the situation and come up with hypotheses about what this all means. And you keep refining that hypothesis as your experience accrues, and you begin to learn more and more about what's going on around you. And as you do that, as your knowledge increases, as your understanding and your comprehension increases, you know, you're going to change your idea of what's true for you. And it's your truth that's going to set you free. And if you follow your truth, no matter what, if you refuse to compromise, you know, you'll progress into more and more expanded fields of perception, which will allow you a more and more comprehensive understanding of what's really going on. You know, I mean, I've met beings that people know as archangels, and I've met beings that people know as ascended masters, and I've met beings that people call extraterrestrials. Right, and some of them are from this dimension, you know, third density reality, and some of them are in higher dimensions of reality. But I mean, I've actually met them, like face to face, eyeball to eyeball. You know, this isn't something I read about. In fact, I'm very careful to, you know, to communicate to people that, you know, I don't talk about things that I read or heard and think are good ideas. I talk about things that I've actually experienced. And if I do bring up a theoretical consideration that I got from a book or a conversation with someone, I'll make it a point to point that out, that this is not based on my experience. This is just a consideration. You know, it's something that someone else has found to be true, and I'm not really in a position to validate or invalidate it, but it's an interesting consideration. You know, so for myself, I don't really deal in beliefs. I make my decisions on the basis of what I call knowledge. And knowledge is not something you can get out of hearing something or reading something. Knowledge is only acquired through experience. You know, if you don't have the experience, what you have is not knowledge, you have information. And knowledge is power. Information is just something to think about. You know, something that you have to ultimately make a decision about. And until you have sufficient experience and have accumulated enough supporting evidence to make a valid decision, then you have to suspend making a decision and just hang out with your considerations. All right, so people say, are you saying there's no God? And you know, my response is, well, no, I'm not saying there's no God. I'm just saying God's above my pay grade. You know, right now I have access to knowledge up to, but not beyond the 12th dimension. And so far I haven't met anybody named God, and I haven't met anybody, whether you consider him an archangel or ascended master, I haven't met anybody who themselves has met anybody named God. So nobody I've met yet has any real information about, you know, this being called God. So I'm not saying there is no God, I'm just saying it's above my pay grade at this point. And you know, and I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, if I remember this fellow in San Diego that was trying to convince me about his idea of God. I said, look, I says, if God's all knowledgeable, everywhere present, all powerful, and all these things, you know, and he needs me to know something, he can contact me directly. I really don't need information to come through an intermediary. I mean, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I had a dream a long, long, long time ago, and I went into this office in the dream, and there was a person at the desk, and I said, I'd like to speak to God, please. And I said, oh, through this door, go through the door, and there was a desk, and there was somebody. I said, I'd like to speak to God, please. And they said, yes, through this door. You know, it's different people every time, but it was just like, it just went on and on and on and on and on. And I think I got bored after a while. I don't know. But certainly, maybe I just woke up. That's what it's like, you know. The idea of God is that you'll keep searching for God.
Uh-huh.
But
hey, you know, I'm looking at the time, JP.
Yeah, we got about 7 minutes left. So you need to go as well.
Would you like to do that remote healing?
Wow. Can we do it for everybody who's ever had a accident in their leg, or is it just me?
Everybody listening to this broadcast or listening to the archive, you know, can play along with this. All right, so simply, you know, you told me what's going on, and I'm sure there's other things going on in your life that you would prefer not to have going on. So I simply ask you, are you willing to let go of any program you have running that's creating something that you don't any longer want in your life, even if you don't know what the program is?
Yes.
Okay, good. So just sit back, close your eyes. If your hands are free, you know, rest your arms on your legs with your palms up, and take a nice deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And another nice deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And another nice deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And just continue breathing that way, in through your nose, out through your mouth. I'm going to go into your fields, and I'll let you know when I'm finished. Excellent. Take a nice deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. Good. You can open your eyes. If you're in a position to do so, you can just stand up and wiggle around a little bit. And when you get the opportunity, just drink some water, you know, because you may be clearing some stuff today. Now, do you feel any difference at all?
Well, that was very interesting. You know that thing that chiropractors do just before they go with your neck?
Yep.
Or maybe also, you kind of swing backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards and then... Yeah, I got the backwards and forwards bit. My head, I could feel my head being very gently moved off. Oh, here we go. But it didn't do that because you just said, and then you came back, you know, you came back and said, take a deep breath. So, but,
Yeah. So what happens, I've taken out the programs, you feel doing or incoherence, and your body is going to conform to the geometry of your fields. All right, so before the session, your body was conforming to the geometry or to the distortion in your fields, which was interfering with a perfect reflection of the geometry. Now things have gone into coherence, so you will experience changes. Sometimes they're instantaneous, sometimes they occur over a period of days. You know, because again, what's shown up is perfect and in perfect timing, and it's designed for you to now access this new dimension of knowledge that you still have to acquire from that earlier incident. And once you've acquired that knowledge, then the incident will pass. Because all these things are just messengers, they're teachers. You know, there's nothing
that was an interesting that, you know, well, I was laying there, and that was one of the thoughts that I was having this evening, exactly that thought, which is one's relationship with disease, or what we see as disease, is a conversation, and pain is a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Having a pain in a particular place is a description of something that has, some knowledge that is hidden there, but it's hidden behind a trauma. Why do you think it's the trauma? Is it just to make you notice? You know, it's like a big slap in the face.
Yeah, trauma gets your attention. Yeah, that's exactly it. Trauma gets your attention. And your body has wisdom. Your body will always express the trauma in an area that's most likely to get your attention and least likely to create permanent debilitating damage. Okay? One of my patients once asked me, she goes, well, how's my health? I says, perfect. Your body will last a lifetime. And she smiled and said, thank you. You know, I didn't tell her how long that lifetime
was. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, but there was another young man, 18, really, really, really good-looking, fit 18-year-old. And he says, you know, when I grow up, I want to be like you. And I said, what do you mean? He says, I want to be a chiropractor. I says, well, if you want to be a chiropractor when you grow up, you've got to start doing what I did that led me to be a chiropractor. If you keep going the way you're going and making the choices you are making, you're not going to live beyond 2 weeks. And he kind of frowned and walked out of the office. And, 8 days, eight, nine, 10 days later, he was killed.
Wow. You know, when you started that story, you said this. I knew that this guy was going to die within 2 weeks for some reason. I had this inkling that this is how the story is going to end.
It was 10 days later. He was walking down the street,
bam,
and a guy whose girlfriend he had been playing around with just walked up and stabbed him in the chest.
Yeah, there you go. Well, there you go. His body lasted a lifetime as well. Listen, Tony, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for being a sport and for just jumping in there and being spontaneous.
Thanks for the invitation.
It's been a very interesting and very pertinent conversation. Please give out your website so people know who you are. They can come and receive some sort of transformation with you?
Yeah, sure. If they want to learn more about what I do or the Metatron Ascension technology, just go to thehealingbusiness.com. And in the right-hand column, you can click on articles and bio. You can read about me, and you can also read the various articles on transformational workout, belief system restructuring, etc.
Perfect timing. Thank you very much. Good night, everybody. This was Journeys with JP.